I wonder how you feel, whether you've ever felt like you've been left out, whether you felt like you've not been included in something. That feeling can make us feel absolutely rubbish and terrible, can't it? The feeling that when, do you know when someone, there's this joke that goes round and you don't get it or you've not been included in it and you just feel like everyone else knows it apart from me? Or maybe it's when you find out that everyone else has been invited to a party and you're the only one who hasn't been invited. Or still worse, maybe it's you weren't allowed to join in because of something outside of your own control. Maybe your background or your race or something else. I remember a time when I felt left out. Now, don't get me wrong, this story isn't as sad as the one, some of the situations I just shared about being left out for your race. But I was in Australia with Leigh and my parents, and I was meeting Leigh's family for the first time. And it was Christmas Day, and we were having a barbecue together, and I was having a great time. I've never had a barbecue on Christmas Day, and it was so nice. And we gathered together, and Leigh's family, they were having a discussion, and they said, do you want to play touch tomorrow? Do you want to play touch rugby tomorrow? And I was like, yeah, I'd love to play touch rugby tomorrow. It'd be so good to do that. So I thought I knew they were good, and I thought we'd just have a bit of a knock around playing touch rugby together. And I was super excited. The next day arrives, Boxing Day, and we're traveling to the place. We pull into the place, and can I tell you, this is no park we pull into. They've hired an actual rugby pitch for the game. Suddenly to realise, this isn't a knock-around anymore. We're not just going to throw a ball around. We're going to be playing properly. But it's got my juices going. I said, yes, I haven't played touch rugby in ages. And so I said to Leigh, we got out of the car, and I said to Leigh, I can't wait to be on your team. I've never played rugby with you before. She's tackled me a couple of times, but I've never played rugby together before. And as I say that, the rest of Leigh's family say, I'm really sorry, but you can't be on our team because you're not a Fianarti. And I was like, what? How dare you? We weren't married at this time, myself and Leigh. We'd gone away, and it's actually the time I asked her brothers if I could marry Leigh. And I said, what do you mean I'm not a Fianarti? And they weren't being harsh in many respects. They were just trying to draw teams. But I had built this thing where I was so excited to be playing touch rugby, being part of Leigh's team, playing with these people that have played like high level rugby, and I was going to be part of that. And I ended up on the foreigners and partners team. So that isn't exactly the same vibe I was going for. In fact, I had like 11-year-old kids on my team. And I was like, this hurts. I've been left out of the team. And I didn't really know how to deal with that. In that moment, I'd felt left out. And there was a part of me that felt I wasn't really wanted. Now, Leigh's family are lovely, and they were just trying to draw teams, as I said. But I reckon all of us have felt left out at some point in our lives, where we haven't been included. Maybe for you, you're a parent, and you get to the school gate, and there's that core group of parents that don't include you in their conversations. Or maybe it's at work, and everyone else gets invited out to drinks, and you just don't. You just go home because you don't even really know about it till later on. Or maybe it's when you bump into people in the street and suddenly their conversations come to a stop just because you've entered into that conversation. We've all felt like unwanted people at times, haven't we? But if what I was to say to you today is sadly, that is some people's experience of the church. Sadly, that is some people's experience of they walk in and they're just left. Maybe we are the cool parents at the gate who don't include people in their conversations. Maybe we're the ones who don't invite people out. It's a challenge, isn't it? It should, if anything, it should make us feel uneasy and even angry that I can say that about some people's experience of the church. I'm not saying just this church, I'm speaking about the wider church here. Because church is supposed to be the most welcoming place where everyone is invited to join in. As I said, what if we are the problem in that? What if we've distorted things and got things wrong and have become quite precious about things that other people feel unwelcome as they engage with us? It should make us go, this isn't right. Because it's not. Because that's not the heart of God, the church, and that's the chapter we're looking at this week in the God story, shows us how beautiful the church is and how it is a church that is inviting and welcoming for all. It's a church that's not like us, but like him. And today I want to journey through the story in Acts 10. It's a great story. And I want us to see that the heart of God is for all people to be welcomed in and know his love and experience his family. So let's set the scene of Acts 10. So Peter, who's going to be one of our main characters today, he's been traveling around teaching and preaching and healing. And in Acts 9, we hear that Peter has healed a paralyzed man and he's called to a place called Joppa, where God's power, he raises Tabitha from the dead. Peter stays in Joppa with a guy called Simon the Tanner. That's referring to his job. Whilst that's all going on, meanwhile, another story is unfolding in Acts 10, where this Roman centurion named Cornelius is going about his life, and then something happens at 3 p.m. At 3 p.m., Cornelius has a vision. An angel calls to him, and in fear, he replies, "What is it, Lord?" And the angel says, "Your prayers and gifts for the poor have come before God as a memorial offering." Let's just pause there in the story for a moment. Imagine yourself in this story, or imagine you're a Jewish listener to this story or hearing it for the first time. I wonder what emotions you would be feeling. If you're Jewish, one of the emotions that should be you're feeling would be a bit uneasy right now, a bit, what's going on? Because Cornelius is this Gentile. What do you mean a Gentile is being included and spoken to by God? They would have realized that this Gentile would have been seen. He would have been noticed and called by God. So we meet Cornelius in this story. And as I said, it's not unusual for Acts to introduce people to us. If you've not read Acts, can I really encourage you to read the work and the life of the early church? It's brilliant. But this time it's different. Cornelius has turned up this centurion. He's part of the Roman army, part of an elite Italian regiment. He's a man of authority and power and status. He commanded 100 people. And most importantly, he's not Jewish. He's a Gentile. And what we see is this man is going to be a pivotal role, play a pivotal role in shaping the culture of the church. So when God speaks to Cornelius, this is huge. He's a Gentile. As I said, he's an outsider. And God says, I see you. I notice you. You matter to me. God is showing his hand here. He's saying, my kingdom is for all who believe. Through Jesus, the door is wide open. That's good news, but it's also a little bit stretching for us maybe, especially for the Jewish listener. It's good news because no one has gone too far. No one is excluded from God's kingdom. But stretching because the church won't just be filled with people who look like us. For the Jews, it was the Gentiles, but maybe for us, it's people of different backgrounds, different stories, or different experiences. But isn't that the beauty of the church? That everyone's invited in. And it's not supposed to look like us. It's supposed to look like God. More than that, we hear that if in this story, that if you're not a Jesus follower here today, let's hear this point well. In that story, we're seeing God is saying, you are all welcome here. If you're visiting us for the first time today, maybe you don't believe in Jesus or anything we're really talking about, hear me right when I say this. You are welcome here. We want you to feel welcome here, and we want you to meet Jesus today. See, Jesus is inviting you into his story. He's saying you're not excluded, and he's inviting you in through his death and his resurrection. The door is open for you. If only you'll turn to him and say sorry and follow him, that's all he's asking. But if you're a Christian here today, this should make us pause and think. Do we really believe that everyone is welcome? Do we really truly show that the love of God to whoever walks through the door? Or do we sometimes hold back? See, the church isn't based on someone's background or race. It's based on something else. Let's look at what comes before God in this story. So what comes before God isn't Cornelius's position, isn't his status, isn't his authority, it isn't anything outward at all. What God notices is his heart. The angel says this, your prayers and gifts to the poor have come up before God as a memorial offering. See, God has always looked at the heart. This isn't new and it shouldn't surprise us. Think about when Jesus was on earth. He spoke about the Pharisees saying you care more about the outward than the outward appearance, than your heart. And this led to people being pushed away from God. Let's think about another verse in the Bible where it says, blessed are the pure in heart as they will see God. God has always cared about the heart. And in Cornelius, he is seeing a sincere, seeking, and generous heart. That is what rises up as a memorial offering before him. That phrase is interesting, isn't it? A memorial offering. I wonder if anyone has ever read or heard about this before. It's in Leviticus, and basically it's flour and oil are burnt before the Lord, and they describe it as a pleasing aroma before God. It's an offering that reminded people that God reigns over their lives, and it was a voluntary act of gratitude and worship that reflects the heart of the giver. It wasn't about appearance, and it wasn't about anything else apart from the heart of the offering. And that's what we see in Cornelius here. That is rising up before God. His heart was an offering. He was seeking God, a life lifted up to him. But what was it about that heart of Cornelius? Well, he was hungry, wasn't he? And the text says that at 3 p.m. he received a vision. It's a bit weird. I don't know if you've ever read the story and go, why on earth does it say 3 p.m.? When else does it say times? Well, usually when it says times, there's something important about the time. And 3 p.m. was the Jewish time of prayer. So Cornelius isn't just going about his everyday life. At 3 p.m., he's adopted some of the Jewish practices that he's heard about, and he's seeking God in prayer. He doesn't really know much about who he's seeking in one sense, but he's adopted the practice of seeking. And we can see in him there's a hungry heart, but we know that he doesn't have all the answers when we find out later on in the story. But he is looking, he is longing, and he's reaching out. And doesn't that sound like our culture today around us? We're living in a nation that is spiritually hungry. People are searching even if they don't know what exactly for. In fact, right now in the UK, we're seeing remarkable signs of this hunger. Since 2018, church attendance has risen by 15%. Among the under 35s, it has increased by 300%. We're seeing new people come into this building every single week. There is a hunger. It is astounding what God is doing and that people are seeking. So the question isn't really, are people hungry? The question is the church ready to receive them? See, this means we will get people who walk through the door that don't fit our ideas, that are outside our preconceived boxes, that may come with mess. And we have to be okay with that. Because the church isn't supposed to look like us, it's supposed to look like him. Loving, welcoming, and kind. And that may make us feel uncomfortable. Maybe not in the idea, but maybe in the practice of it. But we're in good company there, because as we carry on our story, we see even Peter struggle with that. So let's carry on our story together. So Cornelius has had this vision, and what happens after that? He sends some of his servants to go and get Peter, who's staying at Simon the Tanner's house in Joppa. Excuse me. Whilst the servants are traveling, God is already at work. So the next day, Peter is on the roof and he's praying and he gets hungry. You know that feeling. You know, I don't have time to get hungry and I pray. It's unreal. But he gets hungry and whilst this meal was being prepared, he falls into a trance and has a vision. And what he sees in this vision is a sheet gets lowered down. And on the sheet are all these four-legged animals, reptiles, and birds. And he hears this voice. It says, get up, Peter, kill and eat. Peter says, surely not, Lord. I have never eaten anything unclean. And God responds, do not call anything impure that I have made clean. And this happens three times. It's almost like God is saying, Peter, do you get it yet? Oh, you don't quite yet. So let me show you it again. Okay, so he repeats this vision three times. To us, that might seem that maybe Peter's hungry and he's had some weird dreams about animals that he's not really allowed to eat, but he might just be hungry. But there's so much more going on in this vision. This vision is loaded with meaning. And this vision would have troubled Peter. It would have caused him to question and made him think about his way of life from that point onwards. But for us to truly grasp it, we need to delve into a little bit of Jewish law here. The Jewish nation had been given a list of rules on how to live and what makes you unclean and impure. Within that, God has given Israel commands about clean and unclean animals, and we find that in Leviticus 11. And these rules go way beyond just eating in terms of clean and unclean. Even touching certain animals can make you unclean. And actually, there's a bit where it says, if certain animals die and fall into a pot, you have to wash this pot until to the evening. Or if it's made out of clay, you smash the pot and you can't use it again. That's how important these rules were. These rules shaped the daily life of a Jewish person, the religious practices, and a sense of Israel's identity. See, God's command was clear. Let me read this verse to you. It's in Leviticus 11. Do not defile yourself by any of these creatures. Do not make yourself unclean by means of them or be made unclean by them. I am the Lord your God. Consecrate yourself and be holy because I am holy. Do not make yourselves unclean by any creature that moves along the ground. It's quite clear, isn't it, in these rules that these animals will make them unclean. Entire practices, as I said, and rhythms and traditions were built on these ideas. And over time, what began as laws about holiness became twisted, and the Jewish nation was chosen by God, and they started to misunderstand this term called election. See, God's election was never about favoritism or rejection of others. But Israel took it as favoritism, and it hardened into prejudice. Gentiles were viewed as unclean, even called dogs. Systems of separation were built, and we even see that in Acts 10, when Peter is explaining later on, it says this, it is against our law for a Jew to associate with or visit a Gentile. The food laws have become distorted into a way of viewing people. If pork is unclean, then Gentiles must be unclean too. This favoritism became ingrained in the Jewish way of life, yet God's plan has always been bigger. In Genesis, we hear that God promised Abraham that all nations will be blessed. The prophets spoke of a day when Gentiles would join with God's people. And for the church to truly become multiracial and multicultural, favoritism had to be broken. It was time for the church to realize that it was not the outward look or the background, but the heart. It had to realize that the church wasn't supposed to look like them, but like him. It was a moment, this was the moment, of saying, Gentiles, you are welcome. But Peter had to wipe away years of prejudice. He's a Jewish person, remember. But he's seen Jesus love outsiders, but he still carried cultural baggage. And God had been preparing him for this moment. I don't know if you noticed this when I summarized the story early on. Peter stayed with Simon the tanner. Now, if you don't know what a tanner is someone who works with dead animal skins and turns them into things like leather. It would have made him smelly, number one, so he would have been regarded as lower anyway in society because of the smell. But it also would make him ceremonially unclean because he's touching dead animals. But by Peter choosing to stay there, we've already seen Peter is taking steps away from prejudice. It was a glimpse into a bigger journey that God was leading him on. See, we often miss the journey of Peter. In Matthew 16, he is given keys of the kingdom, and he has been using them. We see at Pentecost, he opened the doors for the Jews as thousands of people became saved. We see in Samaria, he brought the gospel to those of mixed Jewish heritage, and now God is saying to him, I want you to unlock the door for the Gentiles. Everyone's invited. But isn't it amazing how God works with Peter? Step by step, he has prepared him, breaking down prejudice, opening the doors of the kingdom. But God required Peter's willingness to change his thinking, his attitude, and his actions. We can see the tension in the text at this point. When Peter says, surely not, Lord. He's seen this vision and his response is, surely not, Lord. Isn't that classic Peter? If you know the story of Peter, Peter has been bold enough to say, surely not, when Jesus predicted his own death. And when Jesus tried to wash his feet, that was his response on both occasions. But each time he says, surely not, God showed him a greater truth. And this time it was the kingdom is for all and all barriers need breaking. But it wasn't easy for Peter in that moment. It says, while Peter was still thinking, he had to deliberate. He had to go through it. In fact, a better translation of that word would be pondering, revolving thought, or deliberate. The RSV uses this term. He was inwardly perplexed. It was a time where he had to think about going forward. How am I going to live this out? It wasn't simply, can I have pork for lunch? It wasn't that at all. It was his entire framework around how he viewed people had to shift in that moment. And ultimately, Peter had to submit himself to God and humble himself. because God's ways are always better than our ways. But if Peter was to truly submit to God, this vision required action. It wasn't okay just to stop at thinking. And thankfully, there are a few men who are about to arrive at the door that give him an opportunity. So these men arrive at Joppa, and Peter responds differently after the vision. He welcomes them in. This is a huge step in itself. He says, come in, and they stay the night. The next day, Peter travels to Cornelius' house, and as he arrives, a crowd is waiting. Doesn't that show Cornelius hunger and expectation again? Isn't that beautiful? Just a little side bit. Cornelius falls at Peter's feet and kind of like worshiping. Peter stands him up and says, stand up, I am only a man. I'm here about God. Peter declares in that place, God has shown me I should not call anyone impure or unclean. He's got it, hasn't he? He's understood. He's taken this vision of animals and he's applied it to people in the kingdom of God, that everyone should be welcomed in to that kingdom. Peter then preaches. He preaches Jesus' life. He preaches his death and he preaches his resurrection. And as he is preaching, this is beautiful, the Holy Spirit falls. Gentiles start speaking in tongues and they start praising God. They're baptized into the family of Jesus. And then Peter stays with him for a few days. This section is incredible, and there's so much in it. I could spend ages, well, I wrote loads earlier on, ages in what you could actually spend time just in this little section. But what I want to pick up on is the actions of Peter post-vision. See, when God speaks and we realize that his kingdom is open for everyone who repents and turns to Jesus, we can't simply nod politely or carry on as before. A response is needed. It's no good to hear God and do nothing. For Peter, this was exactly the same. He had his chance to act on what he had seen and heard. So what did Peter do? Peter did three things in this we're going to pick up. And then as we quickly look at them, I want you to see that Peter had realized the church isn't supposed to look like him, prejudiced, comfortable and cautious, but look like God, welcoming, truthful and committed. So Peter responds to the men by welcoming them in. So Peter is staying at Joppa. Now, you might have heard of Joppa before. You might not have. It's easy to miss in this. But Joppa is the very place where Jonah got on a boat to go fleeing, to go to away from Nineveh. And here we have, because he didn't want to bring this message of salvation to these people. And here we have another Jewish man facing a similar situation. Will he run like Jonah? Or will he go and bring the good news to a culture that is called unworthy? And Peter could have done three things, couldn't he? He could have rejected the men. He could have clung to his past prejudice, even though he's heard God, and said, I can't associate with you Gentiles, and just ignored them and turned them away. I wonder if sometimes we do that. I wonder if God is challenging us today to get rid of our past prejudice and welcome whoever walks through that door, or whoever walks into our life. He could have kept his distance as a second option, couldn't he? He could have listened politely, given them a quick message about Jesus and what's been going on there, and sent them on the way. You go back and tell Cornelius, it's fine. He would have ticked his box and he would have spoken truth, but he wouldn't have invested himself into it. Isn't that our temptation as well? We give our information, but not ourselves. We think that's too messy, that's too complicated. That's too much effort. I've done my bit, someone else can do the rest. Thirdly, he can go with them. And that's exactly what he does. Peter took the vision of God and immediately put it into practice. He listened, he trusted, and he went. He laid aside his prejudice and he invested himself in the gospel mission. This is what God is calling us to do. He gave all of himself for us, and he is calling us to give all of himself to reach others. Even if they live differently to us, or it seems messy, or it seems hard. The church isn't like us, but like him. The second thing we see Peter do in this is that he declares truth. He is truthful. When he arrives, we see that Cornelius falls at his feet and he stands him up, he walks in, and he declares the truth of God. He says this, now I realize how true it is that God does not show favoritism, but accepts from every nation the one who fears him and does what is right. Peter's not too afraid to admit that he's got something wrong in the past. He confesses his own ways were too small, too narrow, and then he boldly proclaims the gospel. He preaches Jesus' life, his death, his resurrection, and that salvation is available to anyone who turns from their old ways and follows Jesus. He realizes that all are invited into the kingdom, all are welcomed at church. See, church, we shouldn't shy away from speaking the gospel, for it is the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes. How often do we believe the gospel is for everyone, but then never actually tell anyone? How often do we shy away from speaking plainly about Jesus, even when we know people are seeking? Peter shows us the way. Don't just believe it, declare it. Thirdly, the action we see is Peter stays. He's committed. I don't know if you noticed that at the end. This is a little throwaway sentence. He stayed with him for a few days. See, the kingdom of God is open to anyone who repents, but it doesn't mean anything goes. Salvation is the starting line, not the finish. Peter stays to teach, to disciple, to walk with them, helping them to grow in grace and in truth, no matter their background or race. It's another clear sign that Peter has got it, that all are invited into the kingdom of God, and that it's supposed to look like him, not us. And this is a vital reminder for us, though, that we can't just invest and tell the gospel and then walk away. See, the church is called to radical welcome, where there is no prejudice and no favoritism. But we're also called to radical discipleship, walking with people, teaching them, helping them to be transformed into Christ's likeness, no matter their background, their situation, or their starting point. So that's all great. Well, I think it's all great. That's all great. But how do we really live that out? If I've said it's more than just listening, it's acting, something has to happen. So Acts 10 shows us something that should shake us and shape us. God's kingdom was never meant to look like us. Not like our backgrounds, not like our preferences, not like our comfort zones. It was always meant to look like him. Like Jesus, who broke barriers, who ate with the outcasts, who welcomed the stranger, who laid down his life for his enemies. Peter had to learn it. Cornelius experienced it. And we are still being called into it today. Maybe you could try some of these things this week. Number one, check your heart. Who do you find hardest to welcome? Is there someone you silently think is too different or too messy, or too far gone? Ask the Spirit to expose any prejudice or pride or fear that keeps us from seeing people as God sees them. Why don't you take some time this week to do that? Or maybe it's number two. Choose welcome over comfort. When someone walks into your life or into our church who doesn't look or sound or act like you, how will you respond to that? The easy way is distance. The Jesus way is welcome. Remember, God didn't wait until you had it all sorted, all together, before he welcomed you in. Or maybe thirdly is this. Declare Jesus clearly this week. Don't just think the gospel is for everyone. Say it. Look for opportunities this week to share Jesus, who Jesus is and what he has done. As I shared earlier on, people are hungry. They're looking for the truth. They're looking for the good news. But they need someone to actually tell them. Or maybe it's lastly this. Invest, don't just inform. Like Peter didn't just pass on information, give yourself this week. Walk with people, eat with them, pray with them, speak truth in grace and help them to live how God wants them to live. Discipleship can be slow, it can be messy, but it's how people are shaped to become more like him. So this week, remember the church is not like us, but like him. And as we come to a close, maybe the band can come up, that'd be great. Imagine if we truly laid down every prejudice. If we welcomed everyone in with open arms. If we boldly shared the gospel. If we spoke in grace and truth. If we really lived that church was never meant to look like us, but like him. What would it look like? It would look like a church where every person is met with the loving embrace of Jesus, where favoritism has no place, where no one is discounted and all are discipled, where the church, especially leaders, invest in those who don't just look like them or fit their mold, but in everyone God brings in. If we really lived not like us, but like him, people would encounter Jesus' love in action. From that place, truth can be spoken, discipleship embraced, and lives transformed. It would be where Dis hears the name of Hope Church and knows that people would feel the love and embrace of God. No, it's a place where whoever walks through the door will be welcomed, hear the good news, and help to live like Jesus. So the question is this, church, as we move into a song. Will we settle for a church that looks like us? Or will we let God build a church that looks like him? A church of radical welcome, of deep discipleship, and of spirit-filled unity. Because it's not supposed to look like us, but like him.